Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to two. Whoa, hey, there's something going on there. I think somebody's got their speakers in there or something. But, okay. I think it might even be me. Yeah, it is. Hold on one second, everybody.
And as cool as everything else is, make me believe that, because that's the thing that everything centers around. The screen is ready for it. You know, the thing, you know, his logo lights up when he does it. Make me believe you shot a bow and arrow before.
Yeah, that's a good point. At least he's improved from how he first did it, because at first he would release both hands rather than just the string hand. And I'm sure that archers don't call it the string hand, but you know.
No, that is the industry term. Don't worry, Tom. You're fine.
No, exactly. So, all right, with all of that said, now that Darrell has told us that we have been muted, it now dawns on me that everything we just did was not recorded, because I also forgot to hit record on this side of things.
Well, I'd
so,
be
hey,
happy
that,
to crap
that's
all
thing.
Over the main event again for you if you want to do that.
Okay, so you know what? Here's what we're gonna do, because hey, guys, as I said, which nobody heard other than the two guys that I have on the show with me tonight, Kelly is not with us tonight. So, welcome to what I like to call, I'm calling Two Idiots, the Doctor and a Wrestling Show, or what we like to call PWT Talks NXT when Kelly is off. Kelly's not here with us tonight, so it is me, myself, Nate Lindberg, and you can find me at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. And I also have one of the typical idiots with me tonight, Tom Stout.
Thanks very much, at Tom Stout on Twitter. And I have a new report up on the torch for you. If you've heard me detailing on the podcasts that NXT now has live fans returning to the Performance Center, I dug a little bit deeper into that and put the details on how they are handling COVID testing and mask regulations and transportation. And I even have a testimonial from a fan who has also attended AEW events and compared the two to one another. So if you're interested in that, that went up on the torch earlier today.
So he was at both an AEW and NXT event and compared the two?
Yes, and
that's
I'll,
interesting.
Tease
cool.
by saying, I'll tease you by saying that he was more impressed with how WWE handled the regulations.
All right. That's actually very surprising to me. All right. I'm going to read that later. And also joining us on the show tonight is somebody filling in for Kelly. I call him the smart idiot, the doctor idiot, and that is Dr. Kevin P. Catani.
Salutations, gents. I'm so honored to be here. Thanks for asking me. You can find me all over the Twitterverse at KP Catani. And I'm just excited to talk NXT with you guys. So let's do it.
All right. So I feel like we just did this. We had a main event tonight of it was. Oh, God, I already moved up in my notes because I thought we were already past this. It was Dexter Lumis and Damian Priest for the North American Championship. Damian Priest retaining in, I believe, it was 12 minutes and 8 seconds. And it was after some shenanigans from Cameron Grimes, who jumped into the ring and kind of made the distraction there. I don't know. I already crapped all over the match earlier, so I'll do that in a little bit again. But then afterwards, we had some more shenanigans with Johnny Gargano interfering, taking out Dexter Lumis with a steel chair, William Regal coming out and then introducing Shotzi Blackheart, who announced that they're going to be doing a spin the wheel, make the deal match for both the women's and North American titles at Halloween Havoc. So that was kind of cool to bring something like that back. Like I was saying a few minutes ago that nobody heard, NXT has kind of they brought back War Games, which is another WCW staple. So I guess it's kind of fitting if you're going to bring back some of these WCW staples that Vince may not want to put on the main roster for various Vince reasons. It's kind of fitting that, you know, they do bring them back to NXT, where they have some of the Dusty Rhodes roots and Dusty's ties to WCW and all that. It's just kind of a nice fitting thing. However, before I keep talking and go on for too long, Tom, what did you think of that?
if it's Wednesday night, it's heel turn Tom these days. And regarding the pay-per-view, or not even pay-per-view this time, but using those names, it's funny. It seems like a movie studio just making a superhero movie or making a movie of a licensed property just to hold on to the IP. I guess we should use this so we don't lose the copyright. And that, you know, obviously that's not how this is working, but that's always what it reminds me of. But I'll tell you what, man, nothing says not trying like main event title contender Dexter Lumis. I'm just thinking about being one of these fans who actually wants to be at an indoor wrestling event in 2020 and looking forward, just aching to go back and see NXT live like so many of these people have since March. And not only do you get the show that they gave us tonight, but it's main evented by Dexter Lumis. So, you know, because of that, I am more focused on the aftermath here, which with Gargano's attack furthers the argument that TakeOver 31 did not need to be a takeover, since we're just going to build to more Gargano and Priest that no one asked for. But on the bright side, Shaw terrible. And I've been saying that she was going to be, and that would actually be a fit for this horror movie host role that she's in. This is actually the Shotzi that I wanted to see. I think it's suited to who she is and how she performs. So I appreciated that her delivery was wooden, and I thought it worked. I hope that she does not improve, because this is the Shotzi I think we should see as the Halloween Havoc host. And I mean, spin the wheel, make the deal. It's fun, I guess. Making the joke about it when they announced it at TakeOver just felt like low-hanging fruit, so I didn't make that joke. But what I should have known was that it wasn't just a joke, they were actually going to do it. But I'm still looking forward to Halloween Havoc. I think it's a novel idea, and I'm for it. But this main event, hoo boy.
Yeah, it wasn't a high note for either men as far as I'm concerned either. It seemed like there was a few, you know, kind of mistimed spots, some punches and strikes from both sides for both men that did not come near each other. There was so much distance between the fist and the face, wasn't even funny. But the whole thing just didn't really come off main event level for me. Yeah, Dexter Lumis coming back. I didn't really necessarily see him in a main event slot like this right away. I was kind of, I've made the comparisons to Ridge Holland. He kind of seems like a watered down Ridge Holland at this point. And I've been wondering kind of where Lumis is going to slot in on the card because of that, because of, you know, Holland. They're way too similar. It's almost kind of like, in a way, I feel like, you know, Raquel Gonzalez is kind of like a Rhea Ripley light. And I'll get into that later on, I'm sure. But I kind of feel like the same thing here. Dexter Lumis watered down Ridge Holland. And with Ridge Holland out of the picture, you know, we might see some more, some of those opportunities that Holland may have had open up for Lumis. So I don't know. We'll see. But, I don't know. It's interesting nonetheless. Kevin Catani, what did you think of the match? And save the wheel or spin the wheel or whatever it's called.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be face Kevin to the rescue here to combat the sea of heels on the other end of the microphones here. I liked the match. I thought it was plenty entertaining. I'm in a wrestling chat group with some buddies of mine. And for one reason or another, and I'll get quick here, but for one reason or another, the tone of the group chat has turned very negative and very, like, criticizing of sort of the wrestling product in general. And I've pretty much put my foot down in my own head to say, I want to stop looking for the things like sort of the mistimed spots and the off strikes, and just try to enjoy and the product for what it is, because it's sometimes too easy to get lost in some of that. And so I'm not saying that to take any sort of moral high ground, but just I did see what you were talking about, Nate and Tom, and I just thought, you know, I thought it kept me watching the television. I thought both guys, belonged in the ring with each other. They were believable opponents for each other. I think that they moved well. I didn't think like either one was blown up or slacking in any way. I think that Loomis is still a work in progress. I feel like they're still trying to figure out what he's about. He's got a little bit of Undertaker. His little entrance in the beginning there has a little Velveteen Dream in it. Like, I guess his character is kind of several things, and I think they're just still trying to figure him out. And maybe now with Ridge out, maybe that opens the door for a little more character development and a little more time on screen for him to develop that. And so I'm going to be optimistic and sort of wait and see to see if maybe he can grab the ball and run with it. As far as the
Mr. Glass half full over here.
I've been called Pollyanna more than once, I think. I appreciated seeing Grimes. I think that was a great spot for him to enter. I kind of figured this wouldn't have a clean finish. And so good that he was able to show up again. And I think that certainly will spur off into a Grimes Loomis program of some kind. For the Johnny and Candace piece, I just really appreciate the marketer in me just really appreciates their coordinating gear. Like, I feel like on one hand, it's kind of cliche that a husband and wife would coordinate, but I think in this case, it works well. It's not the same pattern, but it's coordinating, and I appreciate that attention to detail. I do also appreciate that Johnny is kind of that inner fan monologue now all of a sudden with the, well, didn't he kidnap a guy? He should be in jail. Like they're really sort of letting him speak what we're all saying sort of in common sense land. And I really sort of appreciate that, if you want to call it fourth wall breaking. And then to wrap up with the Shotzi piece, when she said the spin the wheel, I just, that promo from the late 90s when Halloween Havoc was a thing, like my brain literally got transported to watching that pay-per-view with my dad and my brother, and that the chant of spin the wheel make this. So like, I'm just waiting for that to show up at the show, because I'm sure it's either going to be a real chant from the fans in the stands, or it's going to be a piped in chant, but we're going to hear it at least once.
I'm sure.
And we'll see what the stipulations are. I tried to read some of them as the wheel was spinning, but they weren't focusing on it as much, unless I like would have frozen the screen or paused the screen or something. But I'm excited to see what stipulations come up, because I think that'll add some intrigue. If I was a betting man, I would say that both stipulations would seem to immediately favor the Garganos, and then will somehow work against them in the finish of the match. But we'll see.
Yeah, I wouldn't put that past them either. That kind of seems like something would make sense and be fitting of the Garganos. We'll talk more about the Garganos in a bit once we get into some more of the Candace stuff and their segments. But I just love everything that they're doing right now. And one thing that I really appreciate, and you just brought it up, so I'll mention it now while I'm thinking of it, is that kind of fourth wall breaking where, you know, he was like, didn't he kidnap a guy? And it's like in wrestling so often, it's like, oh, the fans will forget about that. The fans will forget about that. But we don't. A lot of times we don't. And it's always really – it's fun to me when you see somebody in the WWE environment harken back to those times those weird things that – you know, maybe a year or two later, in this case, it wasn't quite a year or two, but, you know, in some cases it can be, kind of give you that, you don't feel like you're crazy. You're not taking crazy pills, you know, it did actually happen, you know? All right, moving on, before we get to callers, I'm going to go to one of the other, probably the biggest story of the night, and that is Finn Balor and the kind of uncertainty of the NXT championship. So at TakeOver, Finn Balor, you know, as we all know, his jaw was broken. And apparently it was a little bit worse than they had originally anticipated. He had to go in for some surgery, and they actually showed like the plates in his mouth. And it was a pretty gnarly photo. I was actually surprised they didn't show it in black and white. It was graphic. It was graphic. I do not envy Balor at all. So they also said that the NXT Championship right now, they're not sure what they're going to do with it. They're going to give it a couple weeks to see how Balor heals and kind of, you know, go from there. So we don't know if he's going to necessarily need to relinquish the title yet, or if, you know, if he's going to be able to be, you know, continue on as champion, as champion. You know, whether or not this is a worked angle, I don't know, or if it's a legitimate thing where, you know, they're really not sure if it's if Balor can, you know, compete or not. But if it is that, and if it is, you know, they're kind of giving him some time. In my opinion, I think that's a smart move. They've had a lot of changes in the main event scene, just in NXT in general, due to injuries and COVID and all of that. We've seen a lot of the directions just swap and switch gears, or a lot of angles swap direction. I guess that was the words I was looking for over the, you know, over the past few months. So that the NXT title, you know, kind of switching directions again, isn't probably probably what they need right now. So fingers crossed Balor is, you know, is able to compete. You know, yeah. So we'll go over to Tom before I keep rambling on and on and on about this. See if he has anything to say about Balor and the NXT title.
And honestly, I don't have much because they don't have much.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing them just throw their hands in the air right now and say, you got to be kidding me. And last week, Balor said that we've gotten our answer, and we certainly have not. And this week confirmed, because you got Mackenzie Mitchell standing right there saying, we don't know what we're going to do. So I have nothing to add to the fact that, yeah, NXT has no idea what they're going to do right now.
All right, Kevin.
I thought that segment was a good sort of peek behind the curtain. And I must say, and I think, Tom, you mentioned this perhaps, or maybe I don't want to start attributing things and then be wrong, but I am continuing to like that they're allowing this woman to actually be a sideline reporter, the whole back to you guys, or that's all we know for now. Like, that's really sort of giving it a much better feel than just the blank staring at the camera for 3 seconds while they wait to cut. And so it's really making me appreciate her role a bit more. And I'm hoping that maybe this will be sort of the blueprint for future, at least NXT. I think they can definitely do it in the main roster too, and I don't see why they wouldn't. But that piece of it I appreciated, where like they clearly were putting segues in to let you know, okay, we're done reporting, we're moving on. So I appreciated that piece. And then I agree, yeah, that photo of that plate in his jaw was just wicked. And so I hope that he gets better soon, but I'm also not surprised that they're saying we're going to wait and see, because I think you can still do a whole lot with Balor while he's recovering that doesn't involve physicality, and that can still keep him credible as a champ where you don't have to rush to take it off him real quick. I think there's plenty of storylines going on right now that you can stay in the women's division. You can do some tag team stuff. You don't even need the main championship to be defended, and just have him show up every other week and cut a promo or be part of the announce team or something. And I think that'll be just fine.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I mean, you know, if it's like, you know, if they think he's going to be able to compete within, let's say, the next 2 months, you know, that's the way they should go as far as I'm concerned. You know, like Balor, I feel so bad for him. I mean, it's like, you know, he gets the Universal title, boom, he gets injured. He gets the NXT title, boom, he gets injured. You know, yeah, he had the other two, or the was it two? One, the other successful title run. But yeah, it was Shinsuke and Joe that won it twice. He had the one successful NXT title run, but you know, those other two, they were, you know, that it's kind of heartbreaking. So I'm thinking, you know, if it's within that 2 month time frame, yeah, you know, he doesn't need to necessarily defend it. They don't need to bring up that whole 30 day must defend a title or you have to relinquish a thing that they only bring up when it's convenient. They don't have to talk about that at all. You just roll with it, have them show up on TV, have them show up in a couple angles here and there. And, you know, I think it would be fine. You know, if it's any more than a couple months, you know, it's kind of stretching it and they're probably going to have to, you know, do something at that point. But, you know, I don't know, fingers crossed. I mean, it seems hopeful that they're not just stripping it from him right now and they're giving it some time, but, you know, you never know how these things tend to wind up. So with that, we're going to go over to the phone lines and we'll talk with our good friend, Darrell, how you doing tonight, man? I think you're there, Darrell. Maybe not.
Had to get some more reps in.
He must have. Okay. Well, Darrell, we'll come. We'll try you again in a few here, in case you are still there. But we'll, in that case, we'll kind of move on. So we'll kind of go backwards down the card here, and we'll talk about Imperium versus Killian Dane and Drake Maverick. Or as earlier in the week, NXT tweeted out, "What should we name this tag team?" And they posted a picture of Drake and Killian Dane. And I think I'm voting for the Rockstar Spuds. I mean, it's an homage to Drake Maverick's past, and well, Killian Dane's Irish and potatoes and stuff. So Rockstar Spuds, that's what I'm going to call them. We had Imperium versus Rockstar Spuds. The match itself, let me pull up Kelly's time here, was a mere 3 minutes and 50 seconds on a show where we had about 63 minutes and 37 seconds of wrestling, which if I'm not mistaken from listening to Kelly talk about it all the time, I think it's kind of like middle of the road for probably maybe even on the higher side for wrestling time. If you guys think I'm wrong, let me know, but I think so. But yeah, so this was this match is 3 minutes and 50 seconds where we saw Imperium actually go over Dane and Maverick. But we saw some nice side. We saw the nice side of Killian Dane come out towards the end of this segment here. So let's go over first to Kevin to talk about this match and what you thought.
I am still, I can remember when this show, like, I think I've been listening pretty much from the start of this show. And I just remember being so high on Eichner specifically when he was still sort of a jobber to the stars. And I'm still drinking his Kool-Aid, and I'm just so excited that he's getting a more honest push, because I think him and Bartel are both, I think they're fabulous athletes and they do a great job together. But I'm glad that he's not just the guy with the members only jacket who comes up and gets beat up, that he's actually has a role to fill. So I like watching them in action. What I'm actually really getting excited for, because I think this is where they're going. And if they're not, if they're going to listen, maybe they'll take a cue from us. But at some point in the near future, Dane is going to crack and join in on the shenanigans. And so I know that he's still trying to put up the song is dumb and Fluffy is dumb and you're just a little pipsqueak and I'm just tolerating you because I'm a big brother and mom said I have to take you to the mall with me. And at some point he's gonna just buy into it, and it's gonna be hilarious because he's just awkward and sort of misshapen enough that it's gonna be funny. So that's what I'm waiting for in all of this. So yeah, there's my thought.
All right. Oh, cool. I'm definitely glad that Imperium got the win here. Going into the match, I was kind of thinking we were going to see another fluke, well, either fluke or strong win, depending on the match, from Dane and Drake. And I was a little bit disappointed because Imperium is, they're that tag team that, you know, they're those wrestling purists and, they're supposed to be the tough guys and whatnot. And after already losing to a quote comedic tag team, Breezango Takeover, and they lost their tag team titles, I felt like losing to another comedic tag team is just going to kind of define them down. And they're a team that I really did not want to see get defined down anymore. So I was actually kind of surprised when they got the win. I was actually very surprised. Usually I predict the outcome with pretty decent accuracy, and that one took me way off guard. However, I was glad to see it. I was glad to see it happen for those reasons, and to see the storyline progression of Dane and Maverick. Right at the end, Imperium, they started, beating Maverick up, and then Dane comes out of nowhere, takes out Imperium, and basically screams in Drake Maverick's face that I'm the only one that gets to hit you. And it was just that cool, like, big brother thing. And I kind of think you're probably on the right track, Kevin. It's like, I kind of get a lot of those vibes myself where, they're building up this, tag team where they don't really necessarily want to be together, but, they are the mismatched team or whatever. where, you know, the guy that doesn't want to be there ends up growing fond of the other guy, which we've seen many times. Like Booker T and Goldust is the first thing that comes to mind. But yeah, so, you know, and then eventually, you know, they snap, feud, something. I could certainly see something like that.
Can I just put my vote in for
absolutely
Dusty Classic 21 champions, Killian Dain and Drake Maverick. You heard
it is always
first.
It is always a mismatched team, right? Or seemingly. So, yeah, all right. Why not? I could get down on that. How about you? How about you, Tom? Could you get down on a Killian Dain Drake Maverick 2021 Dusty Cup win?
Yes, but first, guess who made the boobs list this week?
Oh,
apparently.
Ooh.
Fabian Aichner and Marcel Bartel are as numbskulled as they are handsome because on social media they are hanging out maskless downtown and taking pictures with fans' arms right around them, like as little distancing as you could possibly have. So, you know, have fun wrestling those guys. Two guys that, yes, I also, I guess Kevin relating it to listening to our older episodes, yeah, you know that we've been high on Fabian, and I was bringing up Marcel Bartel as a dark match competitor for a while that I enjoyed as a singles guy, but I mean they've been so far defined down as utility players, and I'm including their title run in that because they were just placeholder title holders, you know, since having to come over to NXT US, that I just, who cares about these guys when they're not over on NXT UK with Walter? I will say that the match had character stuff in it, which gave the leg up on a lot of the stuff that we saw tonight. It's furthering, the match existed to further the character development of this relationship with Dain and Maverick. And I mean, shoot, if Imperium's gonna, like, since the tag team is so stripped, if they're gonna go and be contenders because they got a win, you know, we're obviously talking on a night that had an actual tag team number one contenders match, but you know what I mean? A win is a win. Then fine, two birds with one stone. But, I also think that it was probably the only, I'm going to say the only match on the entire show that did not have a foregone conclusion. So there's a lot that I'm down on, but I like the Dain and Maverick that I'm going to give it a pass for tonight. And I'll tell you what, Killian Dain and Drake Maverick, their spouses are not canon to NXT kayfabe. And that line, only I get to hit you, call me sick, but that sounded romantic to me. So, sounds gay, I'm in.
I thought Big Brother, but now you got,
Of course, I don't think that's actually what they're going to do, but now they've made me want it. I want them to fall in love.
And I just have some odd visuals in my head. And with that, let's check back and see if Darrell is actually there. Darrell, I just turned your mic back on. Or are you home?
How you guys doing today? My bad about early.
Hey, no worries, man. Not a problem. What'd you think of the show tonight, man?
It was an okay show. I think it was Ladies Showcase showing. Today's show was a showcase for ladies, and I kind of liked that portion of the show. My first thing that I will give to you guys, because I think the strongest match of this tonight was Candice LeRae versus Shotzi, even though Shotzi they could have eliminated the last part with her with on that mic, but I think Tom called that. but with that match that she had, and I thought that built her up as at the bottom of all the women that they have coming back with Toni Storm and Ember Moon. You got Io Shirai. You got Dakota Kai. You have Raquel, and you have Aria Ripley. She's coming up. She's the newcomer tonight with those matches, and even with the Toni Storm squash match. what do you guys think about this women's division? And when the last time has it really been this stacked and not stacked for where you can see it being there for a while and not for a short time?
Man, so for the as far as the last time it's been this stacked, I'm going to let Tom take that one because I know he'll know it. I know he'll know it. But as far as I'm concerned, the women's division right now is probably the probably one of the best things on the show. The cruiserweight division is also something that I'm really high on. But I think obviously they've given more time and more focus to the women's matches, women's title. So I think I think it is doing a little bit better. A bit better there, in my opinion. This match with Shotzi and Candice LeRae, that was probably my or not no probably about it. It was my favorite match of the night. Match went 15 minutes and 38 seconds. It was I think this is probably the best match we've seen Shotzi in, and I feel like every time Shotzi has a match, I keep saying that she just kind of continues to improve. I think she was a little over the top on the mic later on. However, it is also kind of that campy horror stuff that Tom was talking about. So after you mention that, I'm more okay with it, but still it was weird. It was weird. But yeah, the match itself I thought was great. I really can't nitpick anything about the match as far as I'm concerned. I think easily match of the night, women's showcase this week for sure. Tom, let's talk women.
Yeah, definitely match of the night. Like every other match other than the Dane and Maverick match, it had a foregone conclusion, but it was good enough that it made me wonder here and there. But when you look at where in their journeys Candice and Shotzi are, this was absolutely Candice's, especially having gotten the visual pin on Io at TakeOver, which I didn't know what to make of that, so I didn't even bring it up on our own post show, but it stood out to me like, wait, why would you give that to her? And now it seems so obvious. Well, of course, because she's an effective heel, she's going to whine about it. It's not the babyface moment where the heel goes over and the crowd is going, but they should have won if the referee was only paying attention. It's the other way around where the heel is complaining. But it was a legit three count. It would have been. So I am okay with how they're getting one more match out of this one, as opposed to how they're getting one more match out of Priest and Gargano. The question about the women's division as a whole leads me back to comparing yet again what the division was like when Asuka left and what the division was like when Shayna left, because we're looking at the two most dominant women in NXT history. And as much as I adore Asuka, when she left the division, it was scorched earth. The booking benefited Asuka and failed the division to the point that Ember Moon, as the next champion, didn't even get to go over the prior champion. She had to win it vacated. And then Shayna beat Ember and built up the division around her, even though she was beating everybody except for Kairi Sane, and then even beat Kairi Sane, of course, because those two always go back and forth. I just adored that rivalry so much, and I can't resist even saying it as a tangent right now. But that, when Shayna went up and left Rhea Ripley at the top, is when I would say the women's division was probably at its post Four Horsewoman peak. And maybe even better, because we're just sentimental about how novel and amazing the Four Horsewomen era of NXT was. And, you know, talk to me in a couple of years when I've rewatched it for NXT 8 years back, and we'll see. But it is interesting. And if we're going to talk about it separately, I'll kill my talking point about it now, because there's not much else to say about the very, very basic, oh, hey, remember what happened last week video packages that we got for Ember Moon. But just looking at that, even though there's nothing to say about the package itself, I'm reminded again how I really like the environment now for Ember Moon coming in and getting a new shot, because this division is so much more interesting to work in than the division was when she won that vacated championship. And I would, as much as I like Ember Moon, off the top of my head, I would rank her as the belonging, but as the lowest rank T women's champion ever because of the state the division was in at the time.
Yeah, I could certainly see that. It wasn't ever Yeah, it wasn't a very strong division when Ember was champion, and I think you're probably right. You know, the booking of Asuka definitely played into that. Sorry, you stopped talking a couple seconds before I was ready for you too, so you threw me off, but that's okay. Before we go over to Kevin, I'm going to throw an email in here from Jack Argyle. Jack Argyle says, "Hey guys, hope you are all safe and well. Tom, just wanted to say that you've been great the last few days on Wrestling Night in America and then on the Roundtable with Wade. Some great insight, and everybody check it out if you haven't." Just
thanks very much, Jack. That means a lot, buddy.
All right. Thank you very much, Jack. Just a quick thought. Just a quick few thoughts for you guys. I was wondering if Candice and Johnny were going to move in the draft. I feel like their act is more suited to the main roster, but I am loving it. Where do you think those two would fit on Raw or SmackDown if they were to leave? I feel like on Raw, they could easily eat up quite a bit of time on the three-hour show. I wouldn't worry so much about Candice, but I would worry about Johnny with Vince in charge of his booking. Cheers, guys, and stay safe. Jack A. Swansea from Wales. I know we talked about this a bit ago. I think it was on one of the conference calls that Kelly was on with Triple H. And he was specifically asked this question from somebody else that was on the call. I don't believe it was from Kelly, if I'm not mistaken. But he was specifically asked about NXT and the draft. And one of the things that he did say in that was that Johnny and Candice are safe. They're not going to be moving up to the main roster. That you know, they still have a story to tell in the NXT environment. I don't think that was a red herring. Typically those media calls that they stick to reality, not necessarily story. So I'm pretty sure they're going to be sticking around in NXT for a little while. But you know, we can still take a guess, I guess, of, you know, what they would do on the main roster if we want. So with that said, I'm going to throw over to Kevin on a whole bunch of things here. So on that email, on Shotzi and Lorray, the Ember Moon video package, if you want, because Tom did bring it up, and Jarrell's question about the overall status of the women's division.
Okay, so a couple of first points. Firstly, I want to hear from Jack for next week about they just announced today in the sports world that the Premiership, the English soccer division, is considering sweeping overhauls. And so as someone who lives in country, I'm very interested to hear his thoughts on that. So perhaps next week he can opine on that as part of his email. On to Darrell. I want to give a shout out to Darrell. If anybody is looking for working out videos that don't require a lot of infrastructure or are just body weight type exercises, Darrell, I am so motivated by your videos. And so if anybody has not followed him on Twitter yet and is looking for some easy and nice ways to get more active without needing a lot of fancy equipment, his videos are great for that. Okay, so as far as Jack's email goes, I think probably because of TV time alone, they would be a better fit on Raw with 3 hours to kill. A nice 12 to 15 minute segment would do well to further their character and eat up time. And so I'll say that to that. As far as the Darrell's question about the status of the women's division, I'm immediately like transporting back to maybe 4 to 6 weeks ago when we as sort of this show were very much of the opinion that Dakota was the heir apparent to this title. And to show you how deep the division is, last week when she took the pin in the tag team match, I remember Kelly saying, like, very assuredly, well, of course she took the pin. She was going to be the one to take the pin. So not how the mighty have fallen, but how deep and how quickly deep this division got to where someone who still very much can hold the belt in that division is now sort of the designated jobber to help further other storylines. And if that doesn't speak to how deep the division is, I'm not really sure what does. I thought the match was really good. Like I said, I like Shotzi, and I think that she has been getting better every show. Nate, you had mentioned that, and I think that that's a great sign for her because I very much think that TV time is still at a premium, that if they thought she was not getting better, they would stop wrestling her, right? Like they would have her do more of the appeal and the Tank stuff and the Robert Stone stuff. And so I think that that's a testament to her wanting to get better. From everything that I've heard through various wrestling Twitter and wrestling Facebook, Candace, from what I understand, is a very, very like giving, like, hey, let's practice extra. Hey, let's talk. Like, she's been around long enough that she sort of mentors a lot of the younger women. And I think that Shotzi's getting a real like firsthand look at really some of that experience. And I think that it's benefiting her in the long run. I'm excited to see Candace and Neo go at it again. I think that certainly Candace has earned it from that perspective. And I think she's not someone that necessarily needs the belt to be relevant, but if they did see it fitting to give her a run to sort of open things up, I don't think anybody would be upset by it. And so I'm interested to see where all that goes.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're kind of spot on, especially with a lot of the stuff you said about Candace, kind of giving back. I mean, everything that I've heard, and I said it a few weeks back, everything that I've ever heard behind the scenes about Candace LeRae is that she's just an absolute like lovely person that does want to give back and all, newer wrestlers and younger wrestlers, things like that. So I definitely think you're onto something there. Tom, did you have anything to add onto Jack's email?
I'm just going to briefly say that the main roster as it is right now, I think if they were to go up, Johnny's ceiling is Sami Zayn and his floor is all the way down at Shorty G, as painful as that is to say. I know. I'm just thinking realistically.
Yeah. No, and you're right. You're right.
For Candace, her ceiling is being the new Natalya, and her floor is, I guess, I'm going to say Zelina Vega, just if they just stick her flanking Johnny all the time and only wrestling seldomly. But I doubt that we would see that out of her, but that's the floor.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree as much as that pains me to say. Darrell, what else you have for us tonight?
Okay, we started the show with the Undisputed Era. I liked it that Kyle O'Reilly got to work the stick tonight and got to be the lead guy, since they said Adam Cole is dealing with broken ribs. And I like that they referenced Ridge Hollins, said that they would have put him in the hospital if they would have been able to get their hands on him. I want to see how do they try to switch this story around, since they had them coming up. I guess they were trying to do some story, was have somebody sending out, going out to get them. Hopefully we get to find this out if they win the titles next week. And maybe it's some type of group or something coming in and turning them all baby faces or whatever, or cold on switch and got a new group or what it is. How did you guys like the opening match, and how did you guys like that Kyle O'Reilly was on the stick?
So I, not only did I like the opening match, I really liked Kyle O'Reilly here. Still kind of selling Adam Cole's injuries. So he wasn't on TV tonight, but Kyle O'Reilly came out with Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish, who are about to go against Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan. He came out with them, and as Darrell said, he cut a pretty awesome promo, very leader-esque type of a promo, against, who was it? It's killing me here. Whoever it was. But, he cut a really nice and impassioned promo, and he really felt like the leader of Undisputed Era here. So, especially in Cole's absence. And it seemed, to me anyway, that it was obviously kind of done on purpose to maybe either get us thinking a bit more about this dissension in the ranks or throw a red herring out there, depending on what they decide to do down the road. But overall, I really liked what they did with Kyle O'Reilly here. As far as the match goes with, Fish, Lorcan, Strong, and Birch. Thank you. But as far as that goes, I thought this was a great match. It was also, it really kind of followed the WWE tag team formula, especially the ending. the finish was telegraphed the second that Oney Lorcan hit Danny Burch. Actually, it was even before that. I kind of saw that coming. Finish aside, I did actually really enjoy this match. It's really nice, kind of traditional, old-school tag wrestling, you know, split the ring down the middle. That is my cup of tea. Kevin, what did you think of the opener and Kyle O'Reilly?
I liked it. I don't think that they're terribly comfortable, but I am such a sucker for those high boots that that Lorcan and Burch wear. I just think they look very, like, crisp and just what wrestling is, and not tennis shoes with kick pads and all that. But I don't know how comfortable they are. Also, just as an aside, and I mean this as respect and understand that the comparison is not dollar for dollar, but I do get like a very like Brainbusters vibe from Lorcan and Burch, in very much the Arn and Tully, no nonsense, you know, very snug, very hard hitting. And I think that that's a credit to those two guys, despite them maybe not, well, definitely not being at the level that the Brainbusters were. But I think that style is very similar, and so I appreciate that. What I was going to say about Kyle, and I thought it was a very good promo, but his tone, like Nate, you mentioned red herring, but his tone to me almost seemed like maybe there is something to Adam's injury, like maybe some legitimacy, where like 2 weeks ago we were all sort of saying, okay, here it is, the big split, like everything is his promos are babyface, his work is babyface, like, yeah, this is definitely happening. And now it was very, like, to me, 180, like, you people say we're going to break up, we're stronger than ever, like, you guys don't know. And, like, it didn't seem Shawn Michaels barbershop turning on Jannetty. Like, it almost seemed like, uh-oh, like, we need to quick about face. So if I'm the only one, I'll certainly listen to evidence the other way. But that's the vibe I got from it.
I definitely see, like, I got those vibes myself. Let's put it that way. But it's like I'm torn. I'm not sure which direction they're necessarily thinking. And you know, that is something that I started thinking about too. It's like it did kind of seem like it was a bit of a 180. But at the same time, I could also see them trying to do a 180 like that. A little bit of a switch to kind of almost, you know, swerve us to kind of keep us on our toes. So it's like I've got that in the back of my head too. I don't know. Maybe Tom can straighten us out.
I think that the turn will be more effective if Kyle is completely trusting of Roddy and Bobby and does not suspect that they hired Ridge to do that to Adam. So to me, all this promo was doing was prolonging that overarching storyline. And as for the match, I thought this was going to be a singles match between Danny Burch and Roderick Strong. But I also, if I'm keeping track properly here, I think the Ridge Holland injury is the third time that whatever this program was going to be has gotten changed, has forced to be changed over the past number of weeks. So we got a tag match for number one contendership. And like so much of the first hour of this show and like so much of the past couple shows from NXT, it just has me thinking, okay, so has there been a boardroom decision on the NXT side of things that the best way to compete with AEW is to just show off work rates in overlong matches just for the sake of doing it, because that's what AEW does and they're a success right now? Because this was just like a eyes glaze over kind of a thing. And I always hear myself say that about a lot of matches, but I'm not a work rate guy. I'm a storyline guy. And I respect the talents of all the people in the ring. And it's just like, man, just get to the finish. I don't care about how amazing of an athlete you are if there isn't a narrative behind it.
Now, I hear you. I definitely see that, you know, that side of the coin. And it's like there wasn't necessarily, I mean, there kind of was a narrative, a little bit of a thrown together narrative. The match was announced earlier in the week on social media. I think it was this match, and there was one other that was announced on social media. I don't remember what it was, but I remember specifically this one. But yeah, I could definitely see what you're saying. It's they are they are a bit more of a work ready team, Lorcan and Birch, you know, more so than like, you know, story driven. So somebody that, you know, is compelled to wrestling by story, I could definitely see wanting to, you know, get to the finish there. But, you know, overall, I personally liked it. I enjoyed it. You know, I think it did maybe go a little bit too long, you know, to your point, but, you know, I'm a huge Oney Lorcan and Danny Birch guy. So I personally enjoyed it. I like that style of tag wrestling. But I absolutely see where you're coming from. Kevin, I do not remember. Did I throw to you on this?
You did.
Okay. I thought so. So with that, Derelda, what else you got for us? Jarrell? I think we might have lost Jarrell again. We'll give him another second. Okay. Well, with that, Jarrell, I'm going to put you back on hold, but thank you for your input here tonight. So with that said, let's we talked about the opening match just now, which I believe I said, if I didn't say it, that match went 13 minutes and 25 seconds. So with that, let's move on to let's go to Austin Theory versus Johnny Gargano. We had that match happen tonight. That match ended up going, it was a 14 minute and 14 second match, according to Kelly. Personally, I thought this was might have been my match of the night, and then the women's match happened. I've been watching. If you guys happen to follow me on Twitter, you might know Kelly finally talked me into getting New Japan World. So all day long today, I've been watching the start of the G1, almost a month ago at this point. So I've been kind of watching, you know, that work rate and that New Japan style, like, all day long. And I almost, like, as much as I liked this match for the work rate and stuff like that, I almost felt like it was almost slowed down to some of the stuff that I was watching today. My biggest takeaway from this, though, was the size difference between Theory and Gargano. I kind of, in my head, I think of Theory as a small guy, and I mean, he's not really. I mean, I looked it up. He's 6'1". I think he was 220, something like that. So he's not really a small guy, but he, you know, he's, I guess, smaller in the wrestling world, you know, in a way. But he, like, towered over Johnny Gargano. It made Johnny look really small. And it really kind of stood out to me, maybe just because I think in my head that Theory is much smaller than he is. But I thought Theory looked great here. Gargano obviously did go over, but it took a lot to keep Theory down. So Gargano over Theory in 14-14. Tom,
we're just going to keep rolling with heel turn Tom here. I am shocked, I say, that to find out that the tag match at the beginning was not the longest match on the show, because my goodness, it felt like it. But this was just another work rate match between two heels that existed for absolutely no reason. Who cares?
Well, okay then.
I
hear you.
Mood, I swear. I just, this show, man.
No, I know. It was a strange show. I'm trying to be glass half full, I guess, tonight. Maybe I'm just excited to be talking more. I don't know. I spent the day in the basement by myself, not talking to anybody. So now I get to actually talk to people.
We won't clarify that your basement is actually really nice and you have a lot.
I was going to say, that's like the most amazing setup I've ever seen in my life. Like, if you want to know where the Matrix is going to start, it's Nate's basement.
Well, sidebar, I actually did start the Matrix. There was a project for I used to work for Staples, and I actually started a thing that they still to this day, I believe, call the Matrix, based on the movie. And it was all kind of revolving around jacking computers in and having my guys log in and fixing your stuff. But anyway, so my actual work title for 2 years was Matrix Agent. I loved it. Anyway, I digress. My basement does kind of look like the Matrix. It's awesome. So moving on, We talked to, yeah, I was talking about Theory Gargano. Tom talked about Theory Gargano. Kevin, talk about Theory Gargano.
Now, just to be Tom's polar opposite, what a fantastic five-star match that was. Let me know.
Six stars in the Tokyo Dome.
Oh, God.
Six and a half stars. No, I was entertained. I too favor Tom's character building over work rate, but I think if two guys can go, let them go. The thing that blew me away about this match was how strong Theory is, like, in, like, legit, like, power mode. Like, there were a couple of moves he did to Gargano where he didn't even, like, Gargano didn't help him at all. There was no bounce. There was no pre-jump. Like, he just literally, like, grabbed him and threw him over his head. And so on one hand, wow. On the other hand, hey, pal, you're young. Save your back and your lats while you can. Like, you don't have to show off. At 22 or whatever he is, knowing that somewhere down the line you're not going to be able to do that anymore. And then also, if I can just hit the reverse button real quick, I was thinking, and I should have said it when we were talking about the women and Darrell's question about the women's division, but I thought with the cruiserweight title largely tied up in the six-man tag, like there isn't really like any hard match they're building to for him, and with sort of the building of the North American title, because I think the Gargano program is just whatever. If there and with the main title being on the shelf with Finn, if there was ever a time for an all women's takeover, I think now is that time. You've got that this like 4 to 6 week window that if they wanted to do an all women, the division is that deep that you could put five very good matches together, be they singles, tag team, or whatever. And I think that would do really, really well. So I just wanted to make sure I said that because I forgot when we were talking about the women. And I thought now's the time to do it when all the pressure of, like, title building is largely off.
I would be completely on board with something like that. I mean, I think Evolution was a pretty successful show. I'm surprised they never really went back to it, honestly. But I know I remember talking about it at the time, how Evolution kind of got a it got like that house show feel. I mean, it had a small stage. It didn't have like the proper barricades. Like, you know, it just seemed weird. And I know everything was probably overseas because they were also doing one of the Blood Money Saudi Arabia shows. But it kind of felt like it was a smaller show. But at the same time, they were like touting, you know, Women's Evolution and, you know, this is a major thing, which it absolutely was. Don't get me wrong. But then they gave it this weird feel. I'm going off on a tangent there, but I would be totally down to see another women's pay-per-view. Especially with the NXT roster right now, my God. Yeah, you're right. They could put on a heck of a show, five matches easy. So, I would definitely be on board with that. Let's see. We had one other match tonight that we haven't touched on. And that was Ashante, the Adonis, and that is the with two E's, because one apparently was not enough. Adonis went up against Jake Atlas. Jake Atlas went over in a minute and 52 seconds after some interference by Legado del Fantasma, probably some predictable interference by Fantasma, and I do want to say, right after that, we also got some interference by Swerve to even the odds, make it 3-on-3, kind of stand tall with Ashante Adonis and Jake Atlas against Mendoza, Wild, and Escobar. I do want to give a shout to Darrell if he is still listening, because I think it was it was the last time I was on the podcast. So it was 2 weeks ago at this point. He mentioned that he was kind of getting some stable vibes, and I agreed that I thought that maybe that they were going to like form an alliance or something like that. But I don't know. Tonight, I definitely got those stable vibes between Swerve, Ashante, and Jake Atlas here. I like this. I continue to like what's going on with the cruiserweight division. Tom, let's see if Crotchety Tom likes it tonight.
Well, I do agree with you, Nate, that I don't want to talk about Toni Storm either.
Oh, geez. Wow. Yeah, there's that. We'll get to that.
It's all right. We'll get there. I thought Ashante looked good here. I mean, I kind of have to remind myself every time he's out that I've seen the guy before, because even when he was, and now I'm realizing that, like, last week you were the one losing it and I remembered it and I didn't cut you off, and this week I'm the one losing it. Whatever the name was that he was working under before, it's already slipping away. Every single time I've seen him, he's dressed completely differently. So I always have to be like, oh, right, it's that guy again. I thought he looked good again. Like, he got that babyface promo last week, or was it? No, it was that takeover. And it was like, hey, that was actually pretty good for a guy that's fresh onto TV. And I thought the same thing about this match. And I also, this is a spot that I liked seeing the shenanigans in, because even though Jake Atlas, and I've said it a number of times, Jake Atlas excels at making other people look better. I think he's got a much higher ceiling than just making guys who look better when they've just arrived to TV. So I'm glad that they did, a distraction finish or a cheap shot finish that led to, I don't know, whatever it was. Jake,
it was
Atlas
a roll up pin.
Okay. I wanted to say roll up, but I wasn't entirely sure. All right. Yeah. So, even though this is leading to one of those obligatory six-man tags that doesn't really solve anything and just takes up TV time, and I never really enjoy the booking of those, although sometimes NXT surprises me with them actually turning out pretty well in the end, I thought this was one of the better moments of tonight's program.
Tahuti Miles. Tahuti
Thank
Miles.
Thank you. I knew there was a T there somewhere.
Yeah, I couldn't think of it either, so I did look it up. I didn't think of it. I could have come off like I was the man there, but nope. Google. That was all Google, guys. All Google. So Jake Atlas and Shante V Adonis, Kevin Catani.
So firstly, I will heretofore be signing all of my emails as the professor with three E's, just to not be outdone by old Ashanti. Otherwise, I thought this was, it did what it needed to do. I loved Senor Santos's jacket tonight. Like, whoever makes his coats has the seamstress skills of an all-star, because I thought that was a really striking jacket he was wearing tonight. I also really loved, I don't know how much you guys pay attention to facial reactions, but they had pretty the Legato part had clearly gotten their butts kicked by Jake Atlas and Ashanti, and they kind of are crawling up the ramp, and Santos is coming down the ramp, and they look up and almost like get like this talisman like re-energization. Like, they both sort of nod at him. He gives them like a very like, I'm disappointed in you as a dad, but I'm here to help sort of look to them. And like, instantly they were sort of refreshed and like almost like they respawn in a video game, like, okay, never mind that butt kicking, we're ready to go again. Appreciate that if that's a little bit of the nuance they're trying to build in to Escobar's character, I'm all for that, because I think that's kind of cool that he sort of has not just a physical power, but sort of a mystical power behind him. And I don't know if any part of that is underpinnings of Lucha from way back, but if it is, I'm on board for it. I know that many of the pundits on the Torch are anti-multi-person match for the sake of multi-person matches sake, but I think that this one certainly has the chance to be energetic, if nothing else, and I think that they're all good workers to where it would be a very believable thing. And so whether that's on regular NXT or they end up finding a reason to put that on Halloween Havoc, I think it would do just fine as probably the opener to kind of get the juices flowing. And I'm excited to see what they put into Ashanti. Like, I think he's no namey enough that I think the casual fans will be like, who? But I think if you give him a chance to burn, I think that we'll see some good stuff from him. So I'm excited to see where he goes.
No, so am I. I mean, as Tahuti Miles, I know, he was somebody that, Kelly, Tom and I were high on. I know Kelly, Tom's seen him more in person than I've seen him wrestle, but he's somebody that we've been high on. So I was I'm glad to see him out there and kind of getting this shot. Overall, I'm really high on this segment and just the division in general. And I am glad that you brought up that point about Mendoza and Wild crawling up the ramp, because that definitely is something I noticed. I didn't make point of it. I didn't write it down, but it is something that I did notice. It kind of seemed like he was almost, and I hate to make the comparison to Seth Rollins right now, but it's almost like I kind of almost got like that same like Messiah savior type of a vibe. Maybe it's just the similarities in the long hair and the beard to Seth Rollins. I don't know. It was kind of that, like that re-energization that you said. And I thought that was kind of cool. A nice little touch in addition to the team there.
Well, and if I can butt in quick, sorry.
Go ahead.
Thing that kind of hit me was, if you pay attention to a lot of the like artwork that surrounds Escobar's like backdrop and different things, like it's all very like Aztec-y, like mystical sort of, the Maya, the Aztec calendar and things like that. And so I almost wonder if like there's some sort of, not Christian Messiah Seth Rollins, but like sort of calling on, the Aztec war gods and things like that, where it's like that Escobar sees him as not only the standard bearer for Lucha, but maybe a Mexican standard bearer, or like the ancient arts standard bearer, to where maybe he is trying to channel some of that in his leadership style, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly good observation, because I've noticed like the artwork and stuff in the back, but it like, I'm rating the hits and misses at the same time. So a lot of times, like there's a lot of the details and stuff I'll miss. I know Kelly's the same way too. Writing the live report, there's definitely sometimes that we don't see stuff. But I wouldn't be against that. I wouldn't be against it 100% if they did it kind of like subtly, and maybe if they didn't even necessarily acknowledge it, and they kind of just kept going along these same lines, and they kind of just integrated it a little bit. I don't want to necessarily see it go too over the top, like Undertaker-esque. I don't think he necessarily meant it like that either. But that's the only thing I'd be worried about. Not necessarily NXT, because they typically rein it in down there. But I wouldn't want it to go too over the top. I really like the kind of vibe we're getting from him right now, the whole drug lord kingpin thing. So I don't want to see them necessarily deviate too much from that. But I think some of that stuff, especially if they were to mention a little bit of the Aztec gods and things here and there, that could certainly get interesting. If they did it right. So, all right, as Tom reminded me, we did have one more match tonight, and I did not pick it up because I didn't write it down as Aaliyah versus Toni Storm. I wrote it down as Robert Stone Brand is back. Because I thought that they were going to talk about something else, and then Toni Storm came out and confused me. So this segment started with Robert Stone Brand. We had Robert Stone and Aaliyah in the ring talking about how somebody was going to have a name made for themselves tonight by the Robert Stone Brand. It seemed like they were trying to get somebody to join the Robert Stone Brand. Toni Storm's music hit, and she hit the ring. It looked like she indeed did use the Robert Stone Brand to, quote, make a name for herself, but not quite in the way that Robert Stone intended. We had Toni Storm go over Aaliyah here in, let me see if I can find it. It was 2 minutes and 30 seconds in it was an interesting 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Tom. How interesting did you think it was?
Yeah, it's always interesting from Toni, isn't it? I'll start with the positives because I'm not entirely down on it. I thought the entrance was good. I honestly wouldn't know if this is new music for Toni. Usually I'm on track with that kind of thing, but I can't remember Toni's old music. But I thought that there was conviction in the characterization that you see from her on the entrance. And she was a house of fire during the match. That created a lot of hit and miss stuff, but she clearly went out with the one direction of like, okay, I'm just going to keep up the movement this whole time and be really fast. Like I'm super motivated to be back in the ring and I'm not going to stop. So that worked for me. The same old, it's first match back on TV when there isn't a lot of wrestling happening in the world right now. So I'll try to be forgiving of it, but the same old Tony stuff, even in just a 2-minute match, is still showing up where her crowd psychology is a mix of poor pacing. And I said, you know, the fury of her moves is fine, but the match didn't have like an arc to it. And I realized it was basically a squash, but we had 2 minutes to work with here. And I'd have to go back and look specifically at moments that I was talking about, but that's a note that I wrote down when I was looking at specific things that she was, or rather wasn't, doing. And then the main thing that I always call out about her is that her playing to the crowd and firing up for signature moves is always so half-hearted. She just seems like she's patronizing the crowd. Like, instead of going, yeah, all right, get behind me, she's going, yeah, this is the part where I have to do my little gesture so you know what I'm going to do next. And that's why I was intrigued, forgivingly intrigued, with what looks to be a heel direction for her over on NXT UK before the pandemic shook everything up. Then ultimately, this leads to an almost catastrophic moment, because she's hitting this, it's not new anymore, but the second version of her Storm Zero finisher. And if you go back, every time she hits it, she pops her hips forward to help the opponent rotate into the powerbomb position. But she didn't do that this time, perhaps because she was rushing so much to make it look like she was moving so fast and furious. And thank goodness Aaliyah is well practiced in taking bumps, because she sat right up and made sure that she still has a neck at the end of the night.
Yeah, that was it, kind of in particular what I was talking about. This is a little interesting. That stood out. But good on Aaliyah for, you know, being able to kind of recognize that and correct. I'm not sure myself exactly what happened. But it does sound like you're probably right. You know, she didn't do the hips and kind of get her up in that powerbomb position. But
that's what I saw. And I should also mention that on the positive side of things, even though the video package wasn't much to talk about, they at least highlighted her Mae Young Classic win over Io, and then during the match, or maybe during the entrance, Beth Phoenix was talking up that she got to watch Toni Storm win that Mae Young Classic. So that further goes into the theory that Darrell and I have, that she's probably going to be next up for Io here.
Yeah, no, definitely kind of seems like that's where they're going. You mentioned the video packages, and this is something I meant to mention earlier in the night. We talked about Ember Moon's video package. And usually NXT is really good on the video packages. And like, anytime they come out with one, it's, we're praising it. We're talking about, the way it was shot and this, that, the other thing. Both the video packages for these women tonight, and there really weren't a whole lot of packages here tonight, but both of these were, they kind of just seemed like uninspired, and especially Ember Moon's was very unoriginal. It was just kind of that same story that we've been getting for a while from multiple returning wrestlers. Like, hey, I was gone for whatever reason, and now I'm back in NXT to face the best. And it's, I don't know, that's not the story that I wanted out of Ember Moon. It's not necessarily the story that I want out of most people, I think. You can do that once or twice here, but we've seen that with Knox, and we've seen it a thousand times at this point. I can't even remember, but we see it all the time. So it's like, I was kind of hoping it would be a little bit different. I'm a little bit higher on Toni Storm. I agree with mostly everything you said, Tom. I just think there's something about Toni Storm that I think she's got that marketability. Even if she's not necessarily like the greatest worker in the world, there's something about her that I think people are going to latch onto. I'm not sure if it's necessarily main roster or not, but, I don't know. I've got good feelings about her future. Fingers crossed anyway. So, with that, Kevin, what'd you think of the match?
Well, not a whole lot to form on 2 minutes of work, but the thing that I know that you all have talked about this in past episodes, but if the Robert Stone brand is going to continue to be a thing, And I know that it's mostly a chance for Robert Stone to get his butt kicked and for Aaliyah to talk noise and then get squashed. But I really think they need to add somebody else or somebody's else to just give them more to work with. Now that we know that poor Mercedes was there just to get called up as whatever her retribution name is now. I was really encouraged by that and was hoping that she'd stuck around for a little bit longer. And so I think that's my big takeaway for that if this thing just exists for Robert Stone to get run over by tanks, okay, fine, I guess. But if they want to use this as some sort of female stable, they really have to add a few people to it. And so I'll be interested to see if that does take shape. I'm also pro Toni Storm. I think that she brings a lot to the table. I think I'm sure one of the things they like about her from that marketability perspective is that as an international, she has ties to other fan bases. And so I think that that's something that that any business person looking to expand market reach would be encouraged by. And I noticed, Tom and Nate, too, that I held my breath for her finish in the same way that I held my breath last week for Ember Moon, because I wasn't convinced that Ember was going to get around on her Eclipse either. And so I always, those high impact things always make me, pause a little bit, because you know what it's supposed to look like. And when it doesn't exactly, then you start asking the question of, okay, who did what wrong? And is everybody okay? And it's funny, being a sport fan, I actually find myself watching the referees a fair bit of the time because I'm very interested in kind of how they flow and how they move. And now when I see any sort of high impact move like that, my eyes immediately go to the refs because I'm looking either for the hand squeeze or the X or any sort of like talking into the mic because of, the health of the performers. And so that's where my eyes immediately go. And when I didn't see the ref do any of those normal sort of gestures, I figured that everything was fine.
Yeah, definitely. It was certainly a scary moment, but it seems like everybody came out unscathed. So thumbs up for that. So we had a few promos and things tonight that I didn't necessarily kind of loop into the matches like Kelly does, because, hey, I've never hosted before. I'm doing this on the fly, guys. So let's kind of go back a little bit here, and we'll go back, we'll talk, and we'll just kind of lump them all in together. You guys can talk about them all at once. So starting off, we had an interview with Candice LeRae, Johnny Gargano, you're talking with Mackenzie Mitchell. Gargano was upset at the Loomis title shot. He's like, what does he do? Draw pictures? Kidnap a guy? He should be locked up. And we talked about that a little bit. We thought that was some good stuff out of Gargano. LeRae had the big night against Shotzi, and she started talking about the number one contendership and her match later on in the night. We also had Raquel Gonzalez call out Rhea Ripley for a match at Halloween Havoc. Ripley overheard her talking negatively about her. And intervened, and it turned into a bit of a pull-apart brawl through the Performance Center. Then after that, we had a Killian Dane and Drake Maverick backstage segment where this was amusing. Drake Maverick hired a marketing company to try and beef up their tag team and their brand and everything, showing them different T-shirt designs and fishnets and different clothing and material options and stuff. He was even coming up with different tag names, and I'm still pulling for the Rockstar Spuds, damn it. So we had that segment. Shortly after, I think it was right after the Toni Storm match, we had William Regal, the hypocrite in the hits and misses, because he was immediately asked about the ending to the LeRae Shotzi match, where LeRae pulled out the brass knucks a la William Regal about 20 years ago. And use the knucks to win the match. So I thought he was a bit of a hypocrite, saying he wasn't very happy with LeRae, but there's that. And then he also announced Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Gonzalez at Halloween Havoc. So if you guys have anything on any of those, we'll start with you, Tom.
The doctor covered what I wanted to say about Gargano earlier, so that the Raquel thing was perfectly fine. I like swinging the camera around to show that Rhea was also there and showing the environment that they're in at the Performance Center. Dane and Maverick, the Furry and the Fury. It's been a while since the Adam Rose and the Bunny feud, so it's about time we get another Furry on WWE television. I say we go with that. And what was the other? Oh, Xia Li and Boa. I like that. I like Boa speaking Chinese and guiding Xia. I think it's a good. I don't know. It was oh so brief. So it's very little to go on. But I just like Xia and Boa so much that I'm gonna be optimistic about whatever they're doing. And there is the fact that Xia is not, her inflection does not match the way native English speakers interpret inflection in more effective promos and whatnot in a traditional sense. So having Boa speak to her in Mandarin and she is then conveying the message to Regal in a little bit more of a rigid manner, I think that helps get over that hump, if that creates a hump for anybody. And she's got the new braided extensions in, which I think is a good look for her. I will be curious to see if she changes her ring style at all. But yeah, no reason to be anything but optimistic about these two right now.
And there's my one a week where I'm talking muted, and what a week to do it. No, I agree. I really like the side of Xia Li and Boa. It seemed a little like, so I liked everything that you were just saying, you know, kind of the dynamic between Boa and Xia Li. But it almost like, it kind of seemed like that, like Xia Li, she's just so desperate for that win right now. And I like how that came across. It almost seemed like William Regal was like annoyed with her asking for a match for next week. Overall I really liked it. And I'm kind of hoping this is going to mean some big things for Xia Li. You know, she hasn't really been very prominently featured on NXT for a while, but she's somebody that I really personally like. So I want to see, I want to see more out of her. I want to see her grow and develop. I know she's still, you know, relatively new to the business in terms of wrestling. I think she's been at this for a few years now. I know, her first match, if I'm not mistaken, her first match is a Mayon Classic against Martinez. I'm hoping this means bigger things for her and for Boa. And I know we talked about this a couple weeks ago. I'm hoping we see more wrestling out of Boa, because I was liking what we saw before he got injured. But if not, then at least he's getting some valuable TV time here. So happy to see that.
If there's one thing that I would have hoped for from him, it would have been that when Regal says, "I'll take it under consideration," that Boa would have stepped up to him and maybe just glared at him until Regal conceded. But like you suggested, we had already had multiple instances, and we were going to later have multiple instances of Regal being, I'll use your word, he's just being a hypocrite and giving the heels what they want and letting the heels manipulate him. So it was a fine spot for someone much lower on the card in Boa to just be like, okay, I think we got what we wanted here.
Yeah, no, I would agree there. Kevin, go to you on all of the different various backstage things that happened throughout the night.
All right, so dang it, my ears perked up when you forgot the Xia Li the first time, and I'm like, ooh, I want to bring it up before Tom does. And you went to Tom, and so that's fine. No, but I'm also very encouraged by this pairing. I think if Boa is still in any form of physical recovery, which I can't remember if he is or not,
I'm pretty sure he's cleared.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, but I thought if he's still sort of in the ending stages of rehab, at least this gets him on TV again, because I think it was one of those where he was just sort of getting going before he got hurt. And it was like, oh, you were, you know, sort of catching this wave and then out. And so I'm very happy to see him on TV. I think he and Zaya should work well together. So I want to see where that goes. But everything else, yeah, I think you guys sort of hit it. Everything is just sort of moving storylines along. I'll be interested to see how the next few weeks play out with Raquel, because certainly she is transitioning from the support role to the lead role, despite what we're being led to believe as far as like the showcasing goes. And so like behind the scenes, I wonder where Dakota's headspace is. Have they sat her down and said, listen, you're still on the top of our list? You know, like because I think that Rhea versus Raquel is where the money is, not Rhea versus Dakota. And so I just wonder, like in real life, how Dakota is handling that, or if it's like, oh, it's business, who cares? But for someone to sort of be the heavy, to sort of turn into the feature, that always sort of intrigues me. So I'll be interested to see how that storyline plays out over the next couple of weeks.
All right. And we will wrap things up with a final email tonight from our buddy JB in Detroit. With Andrade not being drafted to either Raw or SmackDown, I read a story today that he may be destined to return to NXT. Hypothetically, if this is true, how does Andrade immediately slot in? Do they do the Finn Balor and immediately insert him into the main event scene? What are some of the first feuds that you see or want to see him have if we're fantasy booking him? And would you see him having more, less, or the same success as Finn Balor if he were to return? As always, love the show, JB from Detroit. I did actually see that myself, Andrade, and there was a female wrestler that was named as well that was potentially coming back to NXT, and I can't remember who it was off the top of my head. Or maybe not even coming back. It might have even been her first run. And I'll have to look it up while these guys talk. But it certainly seems like it could be. I also saw something on today, and I don't remember what the source is, so take this with a grain of salt. But I saw something today where they're talking about NXT potentially being able to draft undrafted wrestlers. It might have even been in the same article. I'll tell you in a minute after I look it up. But it's certainly an interesting idea, especially where NXT was not in the draft. And Ember Moon actually did bring up the draft tonight. She said that she was supposed to be in the draft, but she chose to come to NXT. So it's like I'm kind of wondering, are they going to play that same card with Andrade here? If they do bring Andrade back, if the reports are to be believed, would they play that same card and kind of say, you know, he chose to come back? Was he drafted? I don't know. It's certainly interesting. I'd love to see him come back to NXT, where I think he's found some success on the main roster. I don't feel like he's had the same level of success as he did on the smaller stage in NXT. I largely missed his title reign. Personally, I wasn't watching the NXT product when he was champ, but I was still watching when he debuted. Matter of fact, one of the two NXT house shows that I made it to up here in New England was before he debuted. He was actually going by the name Manny Andrade, and it was the first time I'd ever seen him and first time I ever heard of him. It wasn't the first time I heard of him. I forget what his indie name was. I found out his indie name later, and I at least heard of him. But thank you. So at least I knew who he was, but at the time I didn't realize he was La Sombra. He got some of the – so when that match started, there was absolutely zero crowd reaction for him, none at all. And that's kind of expected. He wasn't on TV. He was a nobody to the WWE universe at the time. I think as La Sombra, he wrestled under a mask, if I'm not mistaken. He might have not even been recognizable to people that knew him as La Sombra. So he had no crowd reaction. By the end of that match, the entire place was on their feet for him. So I think he's proven that he's got it over and over again, you know, both in NXT and on the main roster. So I'd be all for him coming back. Before I keep rambling on and on about it, let's first go over to Kevin and see what you think about Andrade coming back to NXT.
I would be for it. I know that I was very invested in the Drew Andrade feud. And so certainly I go that far with him too. I think bring him back, and as much as some people might cringe to say this, put him with Legado del Fantasma. I think that could add some more maybe heavy credibility to the group. It would give him somebody who's been on sort of the main event big title scene. He fits sort of in that sort of hierarchical sort of vibe. And so I think he'd fit in well there. He's shown that he can do sort of the faction thing with Garza and Zelina on the main roster. So I think he'd be just fine in something like that. And I'd be interested to see what it would do to amping the credibility of the group if they thought that it needed it. Certainly he could stand on his own if he needed to, but I just think the way the storylines are sort of built in right now, I think he would be kind of, even if they gave him the immediate sort of you were here and champ push, he's still sort of in the middle of a larger group of guys that storylines are sort of developing around. So maybe putting him in that group will allow him to sort of get his sea legs back under him and then sort of break him off when you need to, or make him the other singles guy out of the group when matches call for it. So I think that could be interesting.
Yeah, that's something that I certainly was kind of thinking of, whether it be, he's feuding with them or joins them or fuses with them and then joins them, something that I could certainly see happening. There's also a part of me, too, that kind of just wants to see him as a singles and kind of away from them. I think personally, if I'm going to be, I think my vote would be to start working with Fantasma. Where even though Andrade was an NXT champ, and is a main roster star right now, I don't feel like he has the shine that Finn Balor does. So JB was kind of doing a lot of comparisons to Balor and asking if he'd be in the same place. They could book him to be in the same place as Balor is and has been. I don't think they will. And that's nothing against Andrade or his ability or anything like that. I don't think he has necessarily the same star power as Balor does and did on the main roster. I don't think he'd necessarily get kind of that same push. Not to say he wouldn't get a good one, especially if he was to be working with Fantasma. I mean, we praise, the cruiserweight division. I feel like every week, every other week, whenever they're on TV. I'd definitely be all for that. So I looked it up while you were talking, and the other name that was reportedly coming back or coming to NXT, it's actually Mickey James. I've seen it in a couple different places. A couple of them are what I consider to be somewhat reliable. So I don't know, take it with a grain of salt, but it could be interesting. I'd like to see Mickey James come, and kind of tussle in NXT. She's somebody that I've seen a few times in the on the independents as well as on I don't remember if it was a Raw or SmackDown. It was years ago. It was her during her original run. I think it might have even been during her feud with Trish Stratus building up that WrestleMania. But so I've seen her in person a handful of times. I met her once. She was a sweetheart. I'd love to, and she's great in the ring. I'd love to see her kind of get in there and mix it up with like the likes of Rhea Ripley or Io or somebody like that. I'd be all for it if she actually did show up in NXT. Tom, let's go over to you on JB's email and the possible rumors of Andrade and Mickey.
Sure. I can't be sure about the legitimacy of these reports, but indeed Andrade and Mickey are the two people who were left undrafted after the WWE draft. And Andrade in particular is not someone that you would think that they would do that to. I've been a broken record about how he's probably my favorite male worker in WWE. Just as far as, pure work. I don't think, as much as I like him, I don't think he reaches for fans the intangible level of someone like a Finn Balor, where if they come back to NXT, it's not just like, oh man, they're just sending people to NXT now. It's like, okay, we actually wanted this guy back, because I feel pretty safe in saying that was the general feeling around Finn. Like, yes, we got you out of that main roster hellhole that you were in, where you were just going sinking lower and lower, and now you're in a spot where we would prefer to see you. I'm not sure if Andrade is on that tier of former NXT star, despite having been a champ. I'm also tempted to bring up the fact that he seems to have been separated from Zelina, Zelina being drafted over to SmackDown. And, you know, they did do what almost seemed like a reuniting angle on this most recent Monday Night Raw, but it probably will amount to nothing. I'm tempted to bring that up, as I guess I have, but I'm not going to linger on it because I feel like Andrade has grown to a point where he doesn't need a Zelina anymore. The only reason he succeeded in NXT after sort of floundering on the mid-card was because of Zelina being his mouthpiece, and I think he's beyond that now. I would like to think so. So the tricky thing is just figuring out where to slot him, because I don't think you want to bring Andrade back and not have him at the top. But I also don't think you want to bring anyone from the main roster back and have them feuding with a champion who is also a main roster return. So then you have what feels like a main roster feud happening on NXT. And maybe I'm thinking too much about that, and Finn has re-identified enough with NXT that it's a non-issue, but I think I might roll my eyes a little bit to see two people who got called up and spent years on the main roster now back and feuding on the black and gold. I think I would like to see them feuding with people that have only been black and gold. So those are my hangups with Andrade, although I know I would welcome him back just personally. Mickey, I hadn't really thought about that much. I have a favorable opinion of Mickey. There's really nothing bad I can say about her, but I just don't see her fitting in with anywhere other than the, maybe Robert Strone brand. Like, you know, you look at last week's main event with that tag match with Rhea and Raquel and Ember and Dakota with all of it swirling around EO. And I'm not sure I see her fitting in with those personalities and those styles, especially like Rhea and Raquel. I mean, maybe she can put over Toni Storm. She can put over, she could put over Ember. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe she joins the freaking Robert Stone brand. Why the hell not?
Yeah, why not? I could see it happening. But, hey, I don't know. As I guess I typically say, we'll see where it goes. With that said, if this doesn't work, I'm going to sound stupid. But if this does work, it's going to be funny. Hold on, Tom. Tell me if you can hear yourself. Did you hear that?
Oh no, I can't. I know what you're trying to do.
Oh no, damn. Okay. Well, I guess I can't share my audio through Skype.
I will vouch for you. It was amazing. It was the greatest thing Nate's ever done, and it didn't end up in the recorded file.
Yeah. So last week I was not on the show. I'll be honest, I was taking a mental health night. I was still listening to the show, and I was actually on the Skype call, even though I wasn't part of the show. And I was listening, and right at the very end of the show, Kelly and Tom brought me up, and Kelly was like, Nate, way to make your presence felt on the show. And he then signed off. And then I immediately chimed in. I took my mic off of mute and I was like, shut up, Kelly. And it was so much funnier than I can even make it sound right now. I'm going to post it on Twitter later. It's the last 30 seconds of last week's podcast that did not actually record the last like 5 seconds or so of what I said and Kelly's reaction, but it was funny. I'm going to post it up on my Twitter at Nate Lindberg very shortly after this. Now, one thing that I forgot to say at the beginning of the show, hey, next week, if you want to email us, you can. That's pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, or you can call in at 515-605-9345 like Darrell did tonight and talk to us about NXT. I think we have made it to the end of our show. So that being said, Tom, who are you?
All right, thanks. Yep, at Tom Staup on Twitter is the account I will be liking your tweet from.
Excellent. And Kevin?
And you can find me all over at KP Catania. And if I can just make a quick plug, if anybody is looking to dive into the world of emotional intelligence. I do a podcast with a good friend of mine. It's called the How You Feeling podcast, How the Letter U Feeling. You can find it on Spotify, and we'd love for you to give us a listen and let us know what you think.
Yes, it is a great listen. So please do that. I've had Kevin come on my podcast, talking about, you know, emotional intelligence, things like that myself. And I was a great guest. So definitely give that a listen if you get a chance. But with that, hey, you could also follow Kelly if you want. That's Spooky Milk. He'll be back with us next week. Not last week. We don't have the ability to time travel, though. I kind of wish we did. That'd be fun. I'm not going to get into Back to the Future because, hey, Kushida wasn't here tonight. So with that, I'm going to wrap it up, and we will see you guys next week. Take care.